Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Cancer is a disease that affects all animals. According to the American Animal Hospital Association, it's the number one cause of death of our companion animals. But how would you know if your pet has cancer? What signs would you see? Does a diagnosis of cancer have to mean a death sentence? What hope is there for our pet with cancer? My guest today is Dr. Mona Rosenberg. She is a board-certified veterinary oncologist and the chief of staff of the Veterinary Cancer Group of California. We'll be right back after this short message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.fidofriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Pick up something unique at a Bone to Pick Dog Boutique. A Bone to Pick has cool hip fashions for big and small dogs that will have their tails wagging in style. Cat products too. abone-to-pick.com. Check out our eco-friendly pet products and gifts for humans too. abone-to-pick.com. Get your pet's mouth watering monthly with our Gourmet Treat of the Month Club and join a Bone to Pick's free birthday club for your puppy. abone-to-pick.com. Pick up something special for your best friend at A Bone to Pick. abone-to-pick.com. Get 10% off with coupon code PETLIFE.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Rosenberg, thank you very much for being with us today. I know that many people, when they hear the word cancer, think, oh no, that's it. There's nothing we can do.
Absolutely. It is certainly a devastating word to have to hear, regardless of whether it's in a person or in an animal. But there is always hope, and there are always options. And in animals, one of the things that we focus on, rather than really curing a pet, is really on providing quality time. And we can do that through a variety of ways as we approach the disease in animals.
What is cancer? People hear of cancer, and define it for us, please.
Well, that's a great question, because the word cancer is always considered to be a deadly disease. But cancer really just defines a genetic change within a normal cell causing it to grow uncontrollably. There are two forms of cancer. We can see benign cancers, which means that if you have a mass that's been diagnosed as a benign cancer, we can often cut it out. And if we can cut it out completely, it doesn't spread to other parts of the body and it won't come back. The flip side of that is the deadly form of the disease, the malignant cancers, which unfortunately, even if we're successful at being able to remove the entire tumor, still has the ability to either come back in the same or similar location or spread or metastasize to other parts of the body.
How common is cancer? I know I said at the start of this that it's the number one cause of death for our companion animals, natural cause of death. But do people really find that it's that common in their pets?
Well, as a specialist, all we see are pets who have been previously diagnosed with cancer or in situations where an owner suspects that their pet has cancer. And in those situations, we always recommend that they see their primary care veterinarian to start with, because oftentimes a lump or a bump is going to be something simple and nothing difficult to take care of. But as an example, from a standpoint of how common it is, the Veterinary Cancer Group is in two locations. We have comprehensive cancer centers in Los Angeles as well as in Orange County. And we saw 16,000 cancer patients last year alone. So it is quite common, and it is the most common cause of death, especially of a pet over 10 years of age.
So as with people, as we start getting older, we start seeing more cancer. I know they're trying to work it out in human medicine as to why that's so. Any ideas in veterinary medicine why the aging pet has more cancer than the younger one?
Well, as far as why we get cancer, you're right. There are a lot of questions that still need to be answered. We know that there can be genetic causes of cancer, and there are certain breeds of dogs, for instance, the Golden Retriever, the Boxer Dog, the Rottweiler, a variety of others, that seem to be at higher risk for developing cancer than other breeds of dogs. And there's quite a bit of work going on now since we have unraveled the canine genome, just like we have in man, to try to identify if there is a gene or genes that have been disturbed or mutated that we might be able to measure as a predictor of whether a pet might have a higher incidence of developing cancer. So there's still a lot more work to be done, but there does appear to be a genetic basis in animals just like there is in some people. Furthermore, the aging process just leads to breakdowns in our immune system, and we know that it is a strong immune system that is responsible for detecting the presence of the abnormal cells in our body and killing them before they can become a problem. So certain viruses can break down our immune systems and the aging process as well, and then there's a whole myriad of other factors which can cause changes in our immune system, so that surveillance system, if you will, is no longer active.
You've been mentioning dogs. Do cats get cancers? Do koi fish get cancers? Do birds get cancers?
Pretty much every species that we're aware of probably gets cancer. The Veterinary Cancer Group, we primarily just treat dogs and cats because we live in areas where mostly that's what we see. But the occasional ferret, we are currently treating a pygmy goat. And so we know that essentially every species that has been looked at least the mammalian and reptilian avian species, all do appear to get cancer.
I can imagine it's an exciting day when all of a sudden a pygmy goat comes into your practice.
The goat,
and that's
an
owner that really cares.
The goat is actually very cool, and the owners love this goat. The goat is outdoors during the day, but she comes in and sleeps indoors in the evenings, and she is truly a member of the family.
And where do these people live? Because I know you're in Southern California, so it doesn't seem like most people would have a pygmy goat in their backyard.
No, that's true. But we actually have horses and sheep and cattle not all that far from here. This goat happens to live in San Bernardino. I think one of the most important ideas to get across to people is that if they are faced with a situation where their pet has been diagnosed with cancer, that there are lots of options. And the first thing that we typically think about is that, oh my gosh, how could we consider using chemotherapy and radiation on an animal when people get so horrifically ill from those treatments? And the great news here is that dogs and cats, and now this pygmy goat, tolerate chemotherapy much, much better than we do. So we really can provide extended good quality time, and that's really what this is all about.
I know so many people get concerned about the nausea that'll go on with the hair loss, all those things they see with people. Are the animals just more stoic, or is it the matter of the chemotherapy medication works differently in their body?
It's a combination of things. The first thing that I think plays such a major role is that psychologically, our animals are not impacted by hearing the C word. So they feel that as long as their owners love them and feed them and take them for walks and play with them and do the things that provide them with the happy days, that that's really what they're focused on. In people, there's a very real phenomenon termed anticipatory emesis. You anticipate you're going to vomit, and therefore you do. So our animals are not psychologically impacted. They just don't have their heads to screw them up the way we do, Dr. Cruz, which is a huge advantage for them. We use the same drugs, the same chemotherapy agents they use on people. In fact, it's one time when, in many cases, people were experimented on prior to the animals, so the animals finally get to benefit from the flip side of it. We know that we have to use lower dosages in dogs and cats than we use on people, and that's another reason why the medications are better tolerated. So it's a variety of factors. As far as hair loss, animals, we have to remember, for the most part, don't have hair. They have fur. And fur grows very differently than hair does. There are certain breeds of dogs which do have hair, such as the poodle or terriers, any breed that you have to take to the groomer to get trimmed because otherwise their hair would just continue to grow and grow. Those dogs actually will lose their hair in association with chemotherapy. But it always grows back. And really, that's cosmetic. And I tell my owners of poodles and Old English sheepdogs that as long as they take the mirrors out of view of their pets, that their pets really don't care.
That's marvelous. Now, you've been talking about treating these animals. How do we first find out that they have cancer? Because, sure, if you have a lump or bump on the outside, most of the lumps and bumps aren't cancerous. We find, you know, being fat lumps, those lipomas that we find, but there can be cancerous lipomas. What are some of the indications that a pet may have cancer first? What are some of the signs a pet owner may see?
The signs that we can see really don't relate necessarily directly to cancer. They can be the signs of any type of illness. We can see vomiting, diarrhea, weight loss of appetite, loss of stamina, coughing. All of the same sort of things that you could see that might be in association with gastroenteritis, a little bit of a viral diarrhea, coughing because of kennel cough, all of the signs and symptoms that we can see, drinking too much water, that could be the sign of cancer. It could also be the sign of diabetes. So what's important is to know the norm for your pet so that if you start to see abnormal behaviors or changes in how they act or seem to feel, that again, that you schedule an appointment with your general practitioner to try to start running a battery of tests to determine what the underlying cause of that sign or symptom is. If it happens to be cancer, then the veterinary cancer group and other cancer specialists are here to try to help make some sense out of the disease, discuss the options, discuss what the expectations from those options are, and really help to provide that quality time that everybody's looking for.
Dr. Rosenberg, maybe you can answer a question that people, my clients, pose to me so frequently. I suspect there might be cancer. I feel a lump or bump, or I feel the belly and there's a large mass inside and I want to do blood work. Oh, doctor, is that blood work going to show us that the pet has cancer? Are there any blood tests? Are there any markers that veterinarians can look for to say, yes, your pet has cancer and has this type of cancer?
That's a very good question, Dr. Cruz, especially because we know certainly for men to screen for prostate cancer, we can do a PSA test. And we've actually looked at PSA in the dog, and unfortunately, either the marker is different or there is no PSA in the dog when the dog develops prostate cancer. People are looking for different markers. There is one for bladder cancer, but unfortunately, it's not very specific. And for instance, if a dog has blood in the urine, the most common cause of which would be a urinary tract infection, and we did this marker test, it would be positive even though the dog doesn't have cancer. So while we're looking for those markers, right now we haven't identified them. As far as just the routine blood work, that's always recommended on an annual basis, and in some cases as animals age, potentially even doing that blood work on a semi-annual basis. Not necessarily that we're going to pick up cancer in that test, but it's going to help give the veterinarian an idea of what the health of the organs are. That becomes very important from a standpoint of my helping a client make a decision about whether or not they should treat their pet for cancer, because if we're seeing lots of organ dysfunction, then that pet may not be the best candidate for us to treat. And in that case, we would just use comfort measures to try to support some additional quality time, but not really try to go after the cancer per se. So unfortunately, most of the time when I see patients with cancer, their blood work is perfectly normal, which tells us that the cancer is typically not so advanced that it has begun to cause a deterioration in organ functions. Most of the time, if they feel a lump or a bump or a swollen abdomen, then we need to actually, we always start with what's called a fine needle aspiration. That doesn't hurt the pet. It doesn't feel any different than drawing a blood sample. And what we do is we take a tiny needle and we put it into the mass or the lump or the bump or whatever it is, the organ that we're trying to sample, and we gently suck some cells out of it that can be smeared on a slide and have a pathologist evaluate those cells to see if there's cancer there or some other disease process.
Well, we've been talking right now with Dr. Mona Rosenberg, a board-certified veterinary oncologist, about pets having cancer, how they're diagnosed. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after the short message talking a little bit more about the diagnosis of cancer, especially after we just heard about Senator Kennedy and his cancer, and see whether or not animals get that type of a problem and how it can be diagnosed in pets. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Thinking about buying a monkey? How about a ferret or a skunk? Then check out the show that will answer the burning questions: where do you get them? What do you feed them? How do you take care of them? And most of all, what were you thinking? With exotic pet expert and author Bob Tart, every week on demand from Pet Life Radio. PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Rosenberg, it's been all over the news about Senator Kennedy having brain cancer. Do animals get brain cancers, and how to be diagnosed in a pet?
Yes, unfortunately, Dr. Cruz, animals can get brain cancer just like people can. And it's back to the fact that their bodies are very similar to ours, and essentially all the same cancers that people can get, dogs and cats can get as well. Just like in Senator Kennedy, the first signs typically of a brain tumor in an animal is a seizure. And while animals can get epilepsy, they typically only get epilepsy when they're young. So if an animal develops a seizure after the age of typically 6 or 8 years of age, then we start to become much more concerned that it's not just epilepsy that could be controlled with standard anti-seizure medications, but could be something more serious. After checking the pet out to determine whether it's something below the brain that could be causing the seizure, and if all of the other organs function is normal, then the next step would be an MRI of the brain.
Now, with Senator Kennedy, when he was released from the hospital, they mentioned that he had a bandage on the back of his head. So it sounds as though they did, I'm sure, a MRI of the brain, but it sounds as though they also did an aspirate of some sort. Is that correct, do you know?
Yes, they actually did a small biopsy. I think they did a little bit more than just an aspirate on Senator Kennedy. And there are certain places in the country that have the equipment to do brain biopsies. That's not readily available. So in most cases, we use the MRI scan to give us an indication of the type of brain cancer we're dealing with, and then that directs our therapy. In some cases, especially in cats, older cats develop cancer of the lining that covers the brain called a meningioma, and those can often be surgically removed. So in that case, a surgeon or a neurosurgeon would go in and actually remove the tumor. Certain cancers in the brain occur much deeper, and that's the situation with Ted Kennedy, in that it's too deep within the brain really to successfully remove it and still preserve function. And that's something that we're very careful about, especially in animals, is that if an animal develops cancer somewhere in their body, we're not going to recommend a treatment if the treatment is going to be worse than the disease. So, for instance, dogs on three legs do great as long as the other limbs are functioning normally and there isn't significant arthritis. But if a dog were to develop bone cancer in one of its legs, we would consider amputation, but we would only consider amputation if we felt that the dog's quality of life would be good afterwards. In other words, the dog still has to be able to go out for walks, play with the ball, etc. Otherwise, we wouldn't put it through that particular treatment.
That is the one thing that, though I hate to ever tell any client that their pet has cancer, knowing that I can tell them that we are more concerned with the quality of life. Yes, we all want quantity of life for their pets, but that quality is so important, and that if we do need to, as you're saying, amputate a limb, the pet doesn't realize, oh, I'm going to have to feel sorry for myself. They just say, okay, help me, you know, figure out a way of getting up, get going, and they're still really enjoying life. Is cancer preventable?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, Dr. Cruz. I think at some point we will feel that cancer hopefully will be preventable. And there are certain types of cancers in animals now which are preventable. For instance, breast cancer in female dogs. If we spay a dog prior to their first heat, so for most dogs that's at about 6 months of age, then we can decrease the incidence of breast cancer by 80%. Now that's not eliminating it, but it's certainly reducing the chances of your dog developing breast cancer significantly. Another cancer that we see quite a bit of here in Southern California is sun-induced skin cancer. So just like in us, if you are out between the hours of 10 and 4 and you don't use sunscreen liberally, then we are more likely to develop skin cancer. And the same happens in animals. So cats with the pink noses or dogs who love to sunbathe on their back, who have no hair on their bellies, are at high risk for developing skin cancer secondary to excessive sun exposure. So those are essentially preventable.
One of the things I love telling people about is, so often, I'm not a smoker. A client will walk in and my nose picks up that scent of smoke on their bodies as I'm giving their pet an examination. So, anybody in the house smoke? And they have that sheepish look. I said, you know, secondhand smokes can be a real problem for people as well as pets. Can you elaborate on that one a little bit?
Well, certainly there is some evidence that secondhand smoke can cause cancers in people, as you just pointed out. And there is one study that links the possibility of secondhand smoke to cats developing lymphoma. It's only one study, but it's an interesting one. And certainly just from the standpoint of everybody's health and the environment, we should certainly encourage the owners of our patients not to be smokers, or at least if they're going to do that, not to smoke around their pets.
I think I've had a couple of husbands and wives and, you know, in an exam room together look at each other going, fine, I'll stop for the pet. They won't stop for the other person. They won't stop for themselves. But once you say their pet's going to be involved, it's like, oh, fine, I'll stop now.
Well, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. So skin cancer, then we have breast cancer. What other types of cancers are all too common in our pets?
Well, the most common cancer that we see is lymphoma, which would be the equivalent of non-Hodgkin's disease in people. And this is a cancer of one of the white blood cells called a lymphocyte. And the most common presentation in the dog would be that somebody is petting their dog under their chin and feels large lumps. For instance, when our kids got the mumps, you could feel the enlarged glands in their throat, and that's what people are essentially feeling, is those glands or lymph nodes. Typical diagnosis is made by doing a fine needle aspirate, like we talked about before. And that is a very rapidly progressive form of disease in the dog, in that if untreated, or in some cases if the treatment doesn't work, most dogs will only live 4 to 8 weeks before the quality of their life is really poor. Compared to the dog that does get treated, the average survival time is about a year and a half, although 25% of dogs who receive treatment will live longer than 2 years. I actually had one dog that I treated quite a while ago who actually lived 11 years from the time of diagnosis and treatment. So some pets will live a very long time after the diagnosis and successful treatment.
Sounds like you'd had very great successful treatment. Is success in cancer therapy usually good? I'm sure it depends on the type of cancer, but as a rule, could you say, all right, your pet has cancer, but this is what you can expect?
And I think it comes down to, Dr. Cruz, how we decide we're going to define success. Certainly that little dog who lived 11 years, that's easy to ascribe that was a success story. But I think that if you talk to the majority of my clients over the last 20 years, that almost hands down, they would all say that they felt that the situation with their pet was successful, even when their pet died of cancer. And here's why. We gave them hope. They had options. They were able to try to extend the amount of good quality time they had with their pet. And in many cases, we do extend that time. It just doesn't last forever. But unfortunately, nothing does. So for us, a success is that if we take a pet that either would have died very soon after the diagnosis without treatment, and they lived longer than that and better than they would have otherwise, or if we take a patient who was feeling really poorly when they came to us, and through the treatment, whether it be through definitive treatment to try to eliminate the cancer from their body, or whether it was through pain management and other comfort measures and nutritional support, etc., and made that pet feel better for whatever time he or she had, then to us and to the owners, that's a success.
You must have an extremely difficult job because your success, yes, is going to be the hope and the extended quality of life. But as you said, we know that life is going to come to an end. How do you help your client decide when that time has come, and how do you allow them, that pet, to pass on?
Well, it is difficult, and I have to also say that I have the most tremendous staff behind me on the face of the planet. We're all very committed to the same goal, and that is quality of life. And we share that goal with everyone who walks through the door of the Veterinary Cancer Group, so that we make sure right from that first consultation that everybody's goals are aligned, that we're all rowing in the same direction, so that we can then provide the best care possible for that pet for as long as is appropriate. When we lose the ability to provide quality time, which fortunately, through coaching our clients, 95% of the time, our clients actually come in saying, I'm now seeing the change that we talked about originally, and I feel that my pet's quality of life is beginning to deteriorate. Then we talk about whether there's something that we can do to get that boat going back in the right direction. And if there is, then we do it. And if there's not, or if we try that and it's really not working, and the pet is really not enjoying the better part of every day, then we're fortunate in veterinary medicine because we have the option of humane euthanasia. And when there's nothing more that can be done, the last thing any of us want is for our pets to have to suffer. So we are able to step in at that point in time and end their life with dignity and with grace.
You and myself are so fortunate being in our profession because I watched my own father die of brain cancer, and it was one of the most inhumane acts because of the way our laws are written. He needed to take that last breath when he was no longer dad for many, many weeks. But I'm very glad that I'm a veterinarian, that I can allow my clients to let their pets pass on with grace, dignity, and without any pain. It sounds as though your whole team is just a fantastic team, the way that you care, the way that you work with your clients. I know that recently you were given an award as being the third best company in the state of California to work at. How did you do that?
I think, yes, I'm so proud of this, Dr. Cruz, and I'm sorry for your loss of your father. I watched my father die of cancer as well, so I totally get that side of it. I think that I started the Veterinary Cancer Group in 1992, and I started with a vision that my professional goal was to make a difference one family at a time. And over the years, what I have been extraordinarily fortunate to be able to do is to attract like-minded people who believe in our goal and in our mission. And I am only as good as the people that are around me. And I think because I have had a very clear vision right from the beginning that people who agree with our core values sign on, and those who can't grasp what we're trying to do may come for a while, but then they leave because it's not the right fit. And so I really think that what I do is I take care of those around me because I understand that I'm not the most important person in the Veterinary Cancer Group. It's everybody around me that's honestly more important than me. That person at the front, my client care specialist who answers the phone and is that first touch to that client who is emotional and distraught, and through their calming voices and through their knowledge can direct that individual and help them understand that, that there is hope and that we're here to help. And it's really my employees that voted us the third best. I actually didn't even know about the competition, if you will, until after we received knowledge of the award.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm hoping that it would be wonderful to say that you would go out of business, nothing personal, because animals would not get cancer. But we know that's not going to happen. If people did need to contact you, is there a website? Is there a phone number they can contact you?
There is. Probably the website may be a great start, especially for those who may not be local. And that's www.vetcancergroup.com, which I'm sure you'll post on your website.
Yes. Are there very many veterinary oncologists throughout the United States, or are you going to be flooded with people coming in to see you?
Well, there are about 180 board-certified veterinary oncologists in the world. We're unique in that we are truly a comprehensive cancer center. Most veterinary oncologists work out of a facility that's a multi-specialty facility, so there's a surgeon and there's a dermatologist and there's an oncologist, etc. We have modeled our practice after the human comprehensive cancer experience. Having been through that with my dad, it made sense to me that when I took my dad in for his chemotherapy and his radiation, we didn't go into the general hospital. We walked into a special facility that was devoted to those cancer patients and their families. And that's what the Veterinary Cancer Group does. We're a standalone building. If you're sitting next to somebody in the waiting room, you know that they're going through the exact same thing that you're going through. So they act as a support group for each other. And that's very, very powerful, Dr. Cruz, from a standpoint of being able to, especially that first time when you're scared and you're unsure. And my older clients rally around the new ones, because everybody knows who's new when they're filling out the paperwork to be checked in, and they'll reach out to those people and say, which doctor are you seeing, and I've been coming for this long, and you're in the right place, and these people do care. We also have that comprehensive approach from the standpoint of, we believe that there really has to be the holistic side of this, and I don't mean just holistic from an herbal standpoint, although we do believe in the combined approach, and we have an acupuncturist and a chiropractor on staff, and we work with a nutritionist and those things, but part of this is not just in treating the pet. Part of it is in supporting the family, in helping the children of the family understand the death and dying process. Most of us as kids, that's our first experience. And so we have resources to help parents work with their children so that it's an easier transition for them as well.
Dr. Mona Rosenberg, you are fantastic. Thank you very, very much for being a guest today. We hope that our pets never develop cancer, but if they do, hopefully they'll be able to reach someone such as yourself that gives the pet hope, the humans hope, and allows them to have that quality of life and dignity for as absolutely long as possible. My name is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The goal of this show is to entertain, educate, and motivate you to be the best pet owner you can be. Please tune in next week. We'll be talking to another fascinating guest. Have a great one.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.